Welcome to Speaking in Maine on MPBN. I'm Gordon Fellis. Today, our program visits USM's Muskie School in Portland to hear Professor Charles Colgan's economic forecast for 2010. Colgan, a professor of public policy and management and former state economist, serves as a research fellow at the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics. His predictions for 2010 are based on his analysis of employment trends, income, retail sales, and a range of other indicators. If you enjoy this program and would like to hear it again, or perhaps share it with a friend, you can do so by visiting our website, mpbn.net. There, look under the On Demand tab for Audio On Demand, where you'll find this and past Speaking in Maine programs in the archives, a service made possible by member support. Introducing the speaker is Kevin Freeman, Chair of USM Corporate Partners.
It's a pleasure to introduce our featured speaker, Professor Charlie Colgan of USM's Muskie School of Public Service. Professor Colgan is the chair of the Muskie School's Community Planning and Development Program and associate director of USM's Center for Business and Economic Research and the University of Maine System's Center for Tourism Research and Outreach. He also holds positions as a research fellow at the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics and chief economist for the National Ocean Economics Program. Dr. Colgan is also chair of this state's Consensus Economic Forecasting Commission. Prior to coming to USM, he served 12 years in the Maine State Planning Office, including positions as Maine State Economist and Special Assistant to the Governor for International Trade. Please welcome Charlie Colgan.
Well, good morning. I want to thank President Bottman and particularly Joe for the inspiring stories. I'd like to thank Joe in particular for showing up and proving that you can't take my classes and survive. Joe is a survivor of Introduction to Policy Analysis, where we refight the Vietnam War. Which is probably not what he expected to do when he came to USM. So my basic theme today is pretty much given in my title picture, as I usually try to do. I've switched to a terrestrial theme this year, but I'll get back to aquatic themes a little later on. I think that we are at the edge of the woods, but we are not out of them yet in terms of the Great Recession. The outlook is generally positive for the next couple of years. After that, I have some big questions. In fact, let's get right to the basic issues. Are we out of the recession? The answer is we are partly out of the recession, and we should be in full recovery by the second half of 2010. Now, you've seen a lot of headlines that say we are out of the recession. Recessions have two elements to them. One is the fall in output. The other is the fall in employment. We have reversed the fall in output, but with not yet the fall in employment. We have another half year or so, both in the U.S. and the Maine economies, before employment will begin any kind of robust growth. So when will unemployment and the unemployment rate improve? Basically, I think job growth in Maine will resume by mid-year, sometime between May and September. But unemployment over the next 3 to 5 years is going to remain high by historic standards. The general work in the economics profession right now suggests that the new normal rate of unemployment will approach 6%, where it had been around 4%. Will 2010 show growth in the Maine economy? Yes. The Maine economy will grow overall in 2010, but job growth, because the first half of the year will see some continuing declines, will remain weak. How long is it going to take us to recover to get back to where we were before the recession, which in this case we can define as 2008? I think we will be back to where we were earlier in about a year in terms of GDP for Maine, and that's total output, but 2 to 3 years in terms of employment, and that's my relatively optimistic forecast. What are the risks? In the short term, I'm putting the risks to my forecast at 50-50 over the next 12 to 24 months. Now, what does 50-50 mean? It means that if I'm wrong in my forecast, there's a 50-50 chance that I'm either too high or too low. It's about an even bet that I'm too high or too low. I'd like to be more optimistic. I've pushed myself to try to get to 60-40 on the upside, but I haven't been able to quite get there yet for reasons which I'll talk about. In the long term, out 24 months or longer, I'm more pessimistic for reasons which I will talk about, and I'm 70-30 on the downside. So let's look at the evidence. In the U.S. economy, the coincident economic indicators, the measure of current period economic activity, have been trending down but flattening out over the last few months, basically since the summer. Leading economic indicators, indicators of what will be happening 3 to 6 months ahead, have been steadily climbing since the spring of 2009. So that's the first indicator that sign that the leading indicators, in fact, have been pointing up, suggesting a turnaround in the economy, which did, in fact, begin to occur in the third quarter of this year. In fact, GDP growth turned positive in the third quarter of 2009 after six negative quarters. That's a very long recession in GDP terms. The forecast is for the recovery in GDP to take this year and begin a new expansion phase in national output beginning at the end of this year the beginning of next year. Now, that's a very extraordinarily fast turnaround from what is the worst recession at the national level since World War II. The reasons for it have entirely to do with the monetary and fiscal policy measures adopted to try to stem off the worst effects of the financial collapse and to keep the Great Recession becoming the Great Depression 2.0. GDP in the U.S. has rebounded from a 6.4% drop in 2009 quarter one to a 2.2% growth in quarter three. That 2.2% is revised downward in the most recent numbers from 3.5%, but still the positive growth is there. What has been driving positive growth? Well, in this graphic, you can see that the major change was personal consumption expenditures and gross private domestic investment plus government. Essentially, that was the effects of the stimulus. The stimulus, you will recall, was 40% tax cuts and 60% spending. All of the attention in the newspapers is spent on the government expenditure side, but that was only 60 cents on the dollar of the stimulus package. 40 cents was tax cuts, which went into effect earlier in the spring of 2009 and were effective in turning around some growth in personal consumption expenditures as well as growth in the government sector and the private domestic investment. The only negative number here is exports. Net exports began to decline a little bit in the third quarter, though I think that will probably turn around because of the weakening dollar. The fiscal stimulus has been the major issue here. The stimulus contributed huge amounts of money in terms of the effects to consumers, to state governments in terms of stabilizing state and local revenues, and in terms of direct government spending. Most of the effects of the stimulus, the vast majority of the effects on GDP, will essentially end in the second quarter of this year. So beginning in the third and fourth quarters of this year, the current stimulus effect will begin to peter out, and something is going to have to take over for it. The financial crisis is clearly stabilized. What we were looking at last year when I talked about the problems in the financial industry and the virtual shutdown of the world financial system has largely essentially passed. This is the graphic of what's called the TED spread or the Treasury Euro-dollar spread. It's a measure of overnight risk in the financial system. You can see the peak at 4.5% just after the Toxic Asset Relief Program failed to pass Congress. That 4.5% was essentially banks saying to one another who wanted to borrow money for, say, 12 to 16 hours, we want 4.5% for those 12 hours. That's the equivalent of saying, we don't think you're going to be here tomorrow. The TED spread has now come down to below half a percentage point, which is about where it should be. And so the extraordinary intervention by the Federal Reserve, by the European Central Bank, and other central banks to continue to provide liquidity to the system were both effective and had, in terms of stabilizing the financial system, and more importantly, providing the liquidity needed for the economy to right itself after a really sharp and precipitous fall. That 6.4% drop in the first quarter of last year was, on a quarterly basis, one of the largest drops since World War II. Job growth is around the corner. One of the things we look at is the set of indicators. In the red line here, you see the what's called the current period. The red line here is non-farm jobs. You can see that through the end of December, through the end of 2009, December, non-farm jobs in the U.S. continued to decline. But the Employment Trends Index, which takes into account things like the rate of new unemployment insurance claims and also temporary hiring, which is a key indicator of the job market, did in fact turn up in the latter part of 2009, indicating that while job growth has not resumed, it is poised to do so, probably in the national level, sometime in the let's say the February to June period, whereas I think in Maine it will probably be May to September. Other signs are pointing up. The Purchasing Managers Index, a relatively accurate predictor of activity in the manufacturing sector, indicates that there are more and more orders going out to factories and to distributors around the country after a sharp fall off. The Purchasing Managers Index is at the plus 50 range, where it does indicate expansion in the goods-producing sectors. The consequence of that is that industrial production, while it has been erratic, has been up net over the last 2 or 3 months. And even retail sales, which are really which really took a horrible fall and represents one of the biggest changes in the economy as a result of the Great Recession, have stabilized. The early numbers suggest the Christmas season was better than 2008, but to be honest, if you weren't better than 2008, you really were in trouble. Early indicators are that the consumer essentially has stabilized, if not dramatically expanding consumption. At least the fall is over and some rebuilding of sales has occurred. This is happening even though households are rebuilding their balance sheets. One of the most remarkable things about the last year was the shift from dissaving, that is essentially borrowing more than you were saving, among all income classes, from the lowest income to the highest income classes. And in this graphic, you can see the distribution by the quintiles, the fifths of income. By 2006-2008, virtually everybody except the top 5% of the income distribution was dissaving, was borrowing more than they were saving. But by the middle of 2008 and into the late middle of 2009, the entire picture had reversed, and virtually every income class was into savings. So households are rebuilding their balance sheets, though they have a long way to go. This is, in fact, a very important part of stabilizing the economy. In Maine, the job market has not yet turned positive, but it too is poised to. This is a measure of initial unemployment claims, which is the sort of leading predictor or leading indicator on the job market. What you see here are three lines representing 2008, 2009, 2010. You can also see there's a 2007, 8, and 9. There's a little orange line up there that says 2010. That's only the first 2 weeks of 2010. Don't pay much attention to it yet. As you can see, there is a seasonal rise in unemployment claims at the beginning of the year. This is as the Christmas holiday hiring gets laid off and then works its way back into the economy. Notice that what's important in this graphic is that the 2009 numbers are consistently above the 2008 and 2007 numbers throughout the graph. until you get to the November-December period, when finally the 2009 numbers come back down close to the trends for 2008 and 2007. In other words, initial unemployment claims in Maine are trending back towards a more normal period of time, which suggests that the job losses are on the wane and that a turnaround is likely in the near future. Okay, let's do the mea culpas. How did I do last year compared to this year? Well, at the time that I did last year's forecast with you, this was my history for 2009. I had very little in the way of, I had just the first couple of months for 2008. And I forecast that the job decline would occur roughly through the middle of 2010 and would bottom out around 600,000 jobs with a loss of about 20,000 jobs. That was my forecast last year. I went back to my slides and grabbed it right off the slides. I was here last year. This is an honest accounting, folks. So what was the reality like? The reality was that if we now look at history from today's perspective, we see that job declines were much more severe than I forecast. And that was because as I was speaking last winter here, the economy was literally falling down around our ears, but we couldn't see it. We would not see it, in fact, for several months, and I'll show you in a minute what was happening. So the job growth, the job picture was declining substantially more than I was able to forecast last year because of some unprecedented events which were happening even as I was speaking. The result of this, however, is that my forecast this year is still about the same for timing. That is, I expect the job picture in Maine, as I did last year, to remain weak through the middle of 2010. Unfortunately, it now looks like the recession will bottom out in terms of job losses at about 590 or about 30,000 jobs lost rather than 20,000 jobs lost. And I'm a little nervous about that number until next Friday when we see the December picture for the jobs picture in Maine. Last year, I had expected a 2.9% job loss compared, which would have put us as the third worst recession in the last 40 years, 10 quarters down and 7 quarters back. This year, I expect a 5% job loss peak to trough, 11 quarters down and 10 quarters back. So I expect now that the recession, as the data is essentially available to us, it's a deeper recession than I forecast, though it is about the same length, and recovery will be a little bit longer than I was looking at last year. Now, what happened in Maine a year ago? The big change was a huge drop in the first quarter, which actually mirrored that 6.4% drop in the national GDP. This graphic shows wages and salaries in Maine, and what you see in first quarter of 2009 is a 14% annualized drop in wages and salaries in one quarter. There is nothing like that drop in wages and salaries. This is total wages and salaries paid. There's nothing like that in the 40-year historical record we have for incomes in Maine going back to 1969. So in that first quarter last year, essentially huge job losses, massive pay cuts, all combined to reduce the economy at a much faster rate than anything we had seen in the historical record. The major effects of the recession have been essentially where I thought they would be. The big losers have been in the retail sector, which is the biggest which is the second biggest job losses. Manufacturing job losses have exceeded what I thought they would be. I was a little more hopeful about manufacturing, but manufacturing in the U.S. Until the last couple of months, in fact, had fallen faster than I had anticipated. Construction losses were the big the third big loser, along with everybody else, the all other sector. Government job losses were substantially higher than I expected that they would be, and that's with the stimulus money. The government sector remains, from a job outlook point of view, one of the biggest risks in the entire forecast. Education and health, as the essentially the health sector, not education, I expected to show modest job growth, and in fact that did occur. And in fact, the job growth exceeded what I expected for it. The only real one where I missed was I had expected a little bit of growth in business and professional services, and instead there's a little bit of a decline. So that one just flipped, but the magnitudes were not terribly large. Where are the jobs going to come from in the recession? Three sectors will dominate. Health sector will continue to be a major job producer. Nothing unusual here. It was the major job producer in the last decade, both in Maine and in New England and in U.S. Leisure and hospitality, I expect some rebound in that as consumers get a little more confidence under them and as business travel at a modest level begins to recover. And finally, business and professional services. Of the other sectors, government, retail, construction, and manufacturing, all of them will show positive growth from 2010 third quarter to 2013 fourth quarter, essentially the bulk of the forecast horizon I'm using. Of these sectors, only business and professional services will recover the jobs lost during the recession. Education and health, which has not declined, will continue to grow. Of the other sectors, the education and health sector and business and professional services, those are the ones that are going to have to lead us out and get us back to where we were in 2008. The other sectors, while there will be job recovery, the recovery will not be enough to get those sectors back to where we were in 2008. Always a great deal of attention on the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate in Maine has stayed consistently below the U.S. average, with the exception of December of 2008. That was the one month we got up to the U.S. average, but since then we have been consistently below the U.S. average. We're about 8% now, compared with 10% the U.S. level, a 2 percentage point difference. Our unemployment rate has been heading down. I don't put a lot of credence in that trend. I think there are some survey issues and some methodology questions about how we're now measuring the unemployment rate in Maine that do not leave me with a great deal of confidence that the unemployment rate has been coming down. Essentially, the unemployment rate's been coming down even while job losses have been continuing. That can be explained by people leaving the labor force, but I don't think they're leaving at the rates that the survey, current employment survey, suggests. So I'm not sure I buy the 2% differential. It might be 1.8, 1.7. But still, in general, the basic picture here is that Maine has not suffered as much in the job market and as measured by unemployment as the U.S. as a whole. Turning to a couple of other quick sectors for a minute, the U.S., the housing market, which got us into this mess, will not be what gets us out of this mess. The housing market in the U.S. is awash in inventory of rental and for sale properties, foreclosed properties, distressed sales, underwater sales. Basically, there is far more housing available than demand for it, and so this is true in Maine and in the U.S. The housing sector is not going to be what leads us out. This is, in fact, often the case that what got you into the mess is not going to be what gets you out of it. So housing construction in Maine has got a long way to go. We are currently looking at a situation in which I don't expect housing construction for single-family houses. And single-family housing is by far the largest proportion of the housing sector, residential construction in Maine. We have a very small multifamily housing sector in Maine. I'm not looking for a significant turnaround in 2010. I expect the level of activity to stay at about 2,000, a little over 2,000 permits. This compares with 9,000 permits in 2005, which was the peak of the housing expansion. So we're looking at relatively low levels of housing construction. The recovery, probably beginning in 2011, will take us back to historical averages of around 4,000 to 5,000 permits by the end of the forecast period. The commercial sector, I'm not as clear about. We don't have good data on the commercial sector in Maine. But there is a substantial amount of worry about the commercial real estate sector nationally. I think that will probably, I don't think it's as significantly a problem here in Maine as it is nationally, but I suspect that that the commercial real estate sector will remain relatively weak through 2012. What's happening to your housing prices? Well, there are two measures of housing prices. One is the median price, which the realtors keep, and the other is a price index from the federal housing, one of the federal agencies. What this graphic shows is that whichever one you use, and there are differences, and incidentally, there's also the Case-Shiller index, which you'll see most commonly referred to, but that's an index that is only done in metro areas. This is done for the statewide. The median price in Maine is projected to fall 25% peak to trough and recover 11% or 12%. In the U.S., the median price is projected to fall by 34% and recover only 25%. You get essentially the same ratios if you use the OFAO housing index. The upshot of this is that Maine housing prices have fallen by about a quarter, but not nearly as far as the one-third drop in the U.S. level. Maine housing prices will recover, but so will the U.S., though, again, neither of them will recover to where they were prior to the recession. Consumer distress is measured by bankruptcies and foreclosures in Maine. Bankruptcies will not peak until 2011, and will be on a par roughly with the U.S. We will peak a little later than the U.S. Foreclosures in Maine are right on track with the U.S. numbers. So whatever you're reading about in terms of foreclosures at the national level, that's pretty much happening in Maine as well. A figure that received a fair amount of attention recently is population growth. The census reported in December that Maine's population in 2009, in their July 1st estimate, Maine's population actually declined. This compares the 2009 report to the annual average change in Maine population as estimated by the census from 2000 to 2008. As you can see, on an annual average basis, natural population grew in Maine by about 1,200 people from 2008 to 2009. Domestic migration, on average, brought in 3,000 people a year, and international migration brought in 808 with Joe. In the 2008-2009 period, census estimates natural population increase of 789. International migration of about the same level of 828, so you see natural migration falling, and you see domestic out-migration of 2,900. Now, part of that is due to the recession. A lot of it is due to Brunswick Naval Air Station and the departure of the families associated with the P-3 squadrons that are moving to Jacksonville, Florida. So, also, the population estimates from the census have a pretty large margin of error. They were off by 40,000 people in the last decade. So I'm not real worried about this 1 year population decline, in which Brunswick Naval Air Station, in fact, dominated the numbers and will probably do so again in 2010. We had, in fact, anticipated this in our migration forecasts. And so I'm not entirely surprised by a slightly negative number. I'm not even sure I believe it's slightly negative. It could be slightly positive, given the error term in these estimates. Basically, population in Maine in 2009 was stagnant, probably will be again in 2010, maybe up a little bit, maybe down a little bit, but with some population growth beginning in 2011. Now, it being the first of the presentations for the new decade, We ought to look back on the past 10 years and say, where have we come? Those of you who have attended this event before know that my preference for this calling the past decade has been to use the British term the naught for zero, which is naught. And so the past decade was the naughties, in more ways than one. In fact, if we look at where we were at the end of the decade compared to where we were at the beginning of the decade, we should probably borrow another British expression, this one from the 60s, when a very popular television show there and later migrated to the U.S., that was the week that was on the air. Well, I think we can say of the noughties that was the decade that wasn't. And let me explain what I mean. In the decade of the noughties, if we take from the end of 1999 quarter four to 2009 quarter four, in that decade, on net, from 1999 to 2009, population in the U.S. grew by 25.6 million people. Net jobs at the end of the decade were 131,000 over the beginning of the decade. So we grew by 26 million people and managed to produce 131,000 net jobs over 10 years, or a growth rate of 0.5%. In Maine, we were essentially the same thing. The population growth was 44,000. We managed to produce 56 jobs over the decade. The stock market, at the end of the decade, if you use the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow Jones Industrial Average ended the decade 10% below where it was at the beginning of the decade. If you use the Standard & Poor's Index, it was 20% below where it was at the beginning of the decade. If you look at retail sales in Maine, seasonally adjust them and look at the trend over the decade, retail sales in Maine were 8% below where they were at the beginning of the decade on a real, adjusted for inflation and seasonally adjusted basis. Real average wages in both the United States and the U.S. did not grow at all at any time during the decade. People were earning in real dollars exactly what they were earning at the end of the decade, were earning exactly what they were earning at the beginning of the decade. The median household income, taking into account both the size of the household and the earning power of everybody in the household, actually fell in real terms. nominal average wages fell for the first time in this recession to a significantly lower level. That's never happened going back 30 years. In fact, it hasn't happened going back into the post-war era. You can also see this in terms of government revenues. This is the Maine General Fund from 2000 out to 2013. In FY10, this is in fiscal years at the bottom, in fiscal 10, the revenue forecasting process estimates general fund revenue of $2.6 billion. That compares with an FY08 revenue of $3.08 billion. In the last recession we were in at the beginning of the decade in 2002, general fund revenues fell 2.5%. In this recession, over 2 years, they are falling nearly 15%, bringing general fund revenues back to where they were in 2004, in fiscal 04. So essentially, the last 6 years of state government revenues have been wiped out, leaving Maine with a larger population and a larger enterprise to deal with incomes that were back in the 2004 range, total revenues. Why does this matter? The numbers people among you are saying, Colgan, you know, this is all bogus. You're just picking dates, and they're arbitrary and capricious and an abuse of discretion. Who cares whether, you know, what is the meaning of 2009 quarter four and 1999 quarter four? They're just points that you could arbitrarily pick. And frankly, if you look at 2007 versus 1997, you'd see big growth. And okay, but we're fascinated by numbers that end in zero. And so the numbers do matter, at least psychologically, but they also matter historically. This is the record of job growth from 1950 to 1960 by decade. 1950 to the present, 60 years of expansion in the U.S. economy by decade. In the 1950s, the economy added 24% in terms of jobs, 31% in the 1960s, 27% in the 1970s. 21% and 20% in both of the last 20 years. In this decade, essentially zero. In Maine, 10%, our numbers only go back to 1970. So 10% job growth in the 1970s. The 1970s were a hard decade in New England. But we rebounded 28%. The 1980s were a good decade for us. We added 28% of jobs in the 80s and even 13% of jobs in the 1990s. In this decade, using annual figures as opposed to quarterly numbers, we're actually down 1%. So looked at over a 60-year period, this decade really, really does stand out. It is a major change in the American and the Maine economies that simply cannot be ignored, because we are going to get into a recovery and we will eventually get back to 2008 levels. In fact, 2008 was nothing to write home about. This decade has been the only decade in the last 60 years where job growth was below long-term trend, as you can see is implied by these figures. This matters a lot because we really have got to turn the page into something new. We've got to do better than simply get out of the recession. Getting out of the recession will just get us back to what was not a very pretty picture to begin with. The major thing that has gotten us to where we are today, and to allow us to say that the recession is ending, will end this year, and that we will get back to growth in the next couple of years, has been the stimulus and federal fiscal policy. That end is nigh, and the question of what will follow that, particularly with respect to state and local governments, which must, because of the structure of their revenues, endure the effects of the recession for at least 2 to 3 years longer than the recession itself, is a major issue. It is also critical to understand what's happening, because this last decade was different in another way. In the 1990s, we had the asset bubble. We had the tech boom. We had the internet craze. We had the stock market bubble. And it, in fact, burst and led to a recession in 2001. But in that bubble, it created a whole bunch of what are now household names. Windows, Dell, Hewlett-Packard, IBM. Essentially, the 1990s were the great transition decade to the information technology revolution, which began in the 1960s. This asset bubble left us with hugely productive assets that will drive the economy for decades to come. What did the current decade leave us? It left us with foreclosure boat tours in Florida. It left us with massive amounts of housing that it will take generations to demand. I told you I'd get back to an aquatic theme. So the turn of the decade, the turn of the recession, is really a turn, has to be a turn in the American economy. It has to be a turn towards something else. And the question is what? The question is not only what, but what can we do about it? And this is the part that I get worried about. Because the naughties have essentially left us in a condition that was defined by the MIT economist Lester Thoreau in a book 25 years ago called The Zero-Sum Society. Thoreau argued in that book that in the early 1980s, he argued that American society had essentially become zero-sum. We only looked at our own gains in terms of somebody else's losses. And everything that we were asked to do in terms of a gain for us was being of a loss for us was being seen as somebody else's unfair gain. In a zero-sum society, which Thoreau described, quoting Thomas Schelling, using the term that Schelling used for zero-sum games, it is a game of pure conflict. It is a game simply of fighting over the spoils, not of trying to figure out how to make the economy better. The naughties have left us with nothing except a zero-sum society. And it is this ability to change, our ability to invent the economy anew depends on getting us past this. Nothing is more clear about the zero-sum society than the current debate about health care, where a year ago, Americans were solidly behind the notion of changing the healthcare system. Today, a solid majority opposes a change in the healthcare system because they have been told that if anyone else gets healthcare, they will lose. The same argument worked in 1994. There is only a fixed amount of healthcare and health insurance out there. If I get some, you lose. You, therefore, have every incentive to oppose a change in the system, to oppose any change in any system. And in the zero-sum society, we give up nothing, we will give up nothing, we will accept no sacrifice because it is simply a gain for somebody else, not for us. This is a significant problem because what is going to be needed in the next decade are major changes in the way we do business. The zero-sum society is not a new idea. In fact, although the zero-sum idea came out of game theory and John von Neumann in the late 1950s, the idea dates back to Thomas Hobbes in 1651, where he talked about the war of every man against every man, the state in which everyone was competing for resources. For Hobbes, the answer to this was Leviathan, was the all-powerful state. 120 years later, Alexander Hamilton, not a fan of Hobbes's Leviathan state, but a fierce promoter of democracy, which Hobbes greatly feared, Hamilton was equally concerned that supermajorities, that the requirement that everybody had to approve everything, or a substantial number of people had to approve everything, such as in California's two-thirds rule or in the Senate filibuster rule. He wrote in Federalist 75, "The history of every political establishment in which this principle has prevailed is a history of impotence, perplexity, and disorder." So we are, in fact, fighting an age-old battle between each other and between the conceptions of the economy and government. And government really does matter here because the next change that we have to make requires government to get policies right. Everybody, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, is in favor of the green economy or the blue economy if you're at a coastal state. where everybody is looking at windmills, wood pellets, environmental leadership. Everybody sees the problems of creating a more energy efficient and more environmentally friendly economy as paramount, and is offering substantial opportunities for growth in the next decade. But we will not get this, we will not be able to achieve that growth or use the green economy to essentially repay the debt we owe to the planet, which is even bigger than the debt we owe our creditors, if we do not get our policies right. And right now, the policies are mostly fights about subsidies. You saw an article in the paper in the New York Times on Sunday about a government program that gives money to lumber mills for their wood waste, and people in Iowa are upset that it's not giving enough money to corn farmers. And so if the argument is simply about finding a way to distribute the subsidies, we're not going to make it because there isn't enough money to subsidize everything. We're going to have to change the prices. We're going to have to change the way in which we do business, and everybody's going to have to give up something in order to get anything. And this is the part of the economy that worries me the most and why my outlook beyond the recovery is somewhat gloomy. I do think that there are ways out of this. I don't mean to be pessimistic. I do mean to be realistic about the interactions between our politics, our society, and our economy. Because at this turn in the economy, all of them have got to work together, or the economy will essentially recover and then enter another decade of little to no growth, little to no net gain in wealth in the society. And that's going to be too bad, because with the baby boomers, and I see a lot of us out there, folks, retiring in the next decade. Well, some of us, of course, are going to be working longer than we expected to, but that's not going to solve the problem. A couple of more years of work in order to make up for your stock market losses is not going to solve society's problem in this. What should you look? I don't know what the answer to this is. I do know what to look for in an answer. I look for people who say essentially that, let me rephrase that. I want to look for people who are not saying that in order to have anything, you can have everything and nobody has to give up anything. People who say you can have something as long as we make those people pay for it. If we continue that dialogue, which is essentially the way we talk about these things, the zero-sum society will stay in place. We have to shift it to a positive-sum society in which everybody gives up a little bit in order for everybody to get something. How we reframe that debate is going to be critical to how the economy evolves over the next decade. So I am optimistic about the economy in the short run, and I'm basically optimistic about the economy in the long run. But my assessment of risks is significant in both the short and the long run. We're not out of the woods yet. We are at the edge of the woods. We can see it from here. Look beyond the trees and see what's beyond it, and you can see we can get there. But the challenges ahead of us are non-trivial, and we are going to have to change some things in order to get there. They will not happen automatically. Thanks. I guess we have time for a couple of questions.
There's been a topic that's come up in the paper recently about stimulus funds and whether things like road construction actually add to the employment figures. And I'm a Portland Water District trustee, so I can testify to $4 million in additional projects that were done last year that we wouldn't have done. And so could you sort this issue out for us?
At the time the stimulus was designed last year, which was right about now, right about in January, as the new administration was coming into office, they were operating with an assumption, an economic outlook, much like what I showed you where I was a year ago. It was not for nearly as significant a set of job losses as actually occurred. As at the end of the day, the stimulus was sized to essentially replace one-third of what the economy was losing, one-third of the jobs, one-third of the GDP outlook, one-third of the consumption drop. And that's about, when we do the final accounting, that's about where it will come in, maybe a little low, maybe a little higher than that. So essentially the argument that the stimulus, and the argument was made by the administration, by the Obama administration, that the stimulus would solve the problem, or at least that's what people heard them saying, it was never going to happen. Not the least because as soon as it was sent to the Congress spent most of its efforts trying to make a smaller stimulus than the one the president wanted. And the president's stimulus package was only going to replace a third of the problems, what would ultimately be the size of the problem. So what you see in these arguments about the stimulus is the stimulus did not solve the problem for the economy. It did not create, it did not solve the unemployment rate. Well, the truth is that the rest of the economy was sinking at such a fast rate and job losses were at such a high rate, with 7.2 million jobs lost nationally. The stimulus package that the size it was never going to essentially ease the unemployment rate. The best it could do, and what exactly it did do, was shorten and and was to keep the recession shorter and shallower than it would otherwise have been. It's very difficult for people, however, except if you do the modeling the way I see it. I see the world in terms of computer models, and I see what the economy does without the stimulus and with the stimulus. It's very difficult if you don't see the world the way I do to appreciate how important it really was.
Hi, Charlie. A question on where you might foresee main revenue sharing going, or where main revenues are heading, and also what your thoughts might be on main tourism and how that might affect us or not.
Revenues are projected to recover. This FY10 will be the bottom, assuming all the other things I've said are right. FY10 will be the bottom at $2.6 billion in the general fund. But by the end of the forecast period, because of the weakness in growth, we're only looking at $2.9 billion, or essentially where we were in FY06. It will take us 4 years to get from FY04 to FY06 levels of general fund revenues. So revenue growth will turn positive. Tourism, I expect 2010 and 2011 to be generally positive, but in terms of tourism relative to 2009. But I have to say that if you can't beat 2009 now, in any of the subsequent years, if you can't beat your 2009 levels, worry, unless you have, an extraordinarily individual circumstance in 2009. Some companies, of course, do very well in recessionary periods. But I am looking for the consumer is on the way back, but diverting much more of their income to savings than they have been. So the big ticket, long spending vacation probably is not coming back, but tourists will. Thanks.
You've been listening to Professor Charles Colgan's 2010 Economic Forecast on Speaking in Maine. If you missed part of the program or would like to hear it again, you can do so by visiting mpbn.net. There, look under the On Demand tab for Audio On Demand, where you'll find this and an archive of past Speaking in Maine programs, a service made possible by member support. Charles Beck is the executive producer of the program. For Speaking in Maine, I'm your producer and host, Gordon Fellis.